Welcome to the Non-Breaking Space Show. From Austin, Texas, I'm the Internet's Christopher Schmidt. And on today's show, we welcome back Gina Bolton and Micah Gottbold. Both Gina and Micah have been doing some great work with design systems, and I thought it'd be a great idea to get both of them on the show at the same time and talk with them about what design systems are, tools for creating design systems, and what they think the direction of design systems are taking us. Before we get started, some things I'd like you to know. Make plans for CSS DevConf 2017. Grab your tickets now and learn from Chris Coyer, Wes Boss, Mina Markham, Harry Roberts, Estelle Weil, and many, many more, and New Orleans. Tickets are on sale at cssdevconf.com. The UX Design Newsletter is a weekly list of articles, tutorials, and inspiration handpicked by yours truly. Sign up at uxdesignnewsletter.com and have the best links of the week sent to your email. Speaking of email, set it and forget it, the Non-Breaking Space Show newsletter. Whenever we have a new show ready, it gets delivered right to your inbox. Sign up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. Find show notes and links discussed in today's episode at nonbreakingspace.tv. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telejct, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. As always, thank you for telling others about Non-Breaking Space. Now, on with the show. Thanks for being on the show. Again, you guys have been on the show before. So really appreciate you coming back. And I thought, like, you know, you guys, both of you are working in the space of design systems. And I thought it'd be great just to get you guys talking together and see what you guys think about design systems. Just a quick rehash of what they are, just in case people who are listening don't know what they are. And then maybe convert that into, like, what's the state of design systems these days in terms of what they are. So Gina, would you just care to elaborate, like, what is a design system?
Yeah, sure. There are a lot of different definitions people seem to have these days. Like, at the basic core of what it is, it's, you know, thinking through a design in a systemic way and applying that systemically. But in the context of today's software design and product design, it kind of has come to mean an entire, like, ecosystem of tools and services and people to systemize that design. So it's kind of a bigger thing now than it used to be. Yeah. Most commonly, people think of style guides, pattern libraries, CSS frameworks. In my worldview, I even look at things like, voice and tone and brand and all that as part of a design system too, even though some companies don't include that in theirs. Okay. But it comes down to what you need for your company and how your team works. So your design system might be very different from somebody else's.
Right. So a design system, like an art deliverable or an artifact of a design system could be like it could be several things, right? Because it could be like a style guide, which is pretty common in print world, which I have some background in. So you come up with a style guide, and one of the things that was problem with style guides, people write style guides, and then I've written them for clients, and they just go nowhere. Like, the minute you write them, no one pays attention to them, and so design systems, you know, you actually, like, you can build on, like, a pattern lab. Right, I guess in Pattern Lab, we've talked to the people who built Pattern Lab. It's like Dave, and Dave Olson, so a design system could be something you built upon Pattern Lab. Is that accurate? Is that, like,
it could be? Yeah, okay. When I look at the NASA graphic standards that was really popular on Kickstarter, right. That's a design system to me still, but okay, yeah. In the context of, you know, tech and product and software, typically it's something that's using tooling. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So and then I just want to throw this in there because it was really popular for, it is still very popular. I enjoy the concept, is that style tiles, right? So style tiles is more like a kind of fraction view of what a design system could be, because it's really like a tool to get clients to agree on a direction. But, like, now with design systems and pattern labs, you can actually just set up really quickly and easily in theory. You know, but I haven't made many myself, so I don't, so you can tell me how hard or easy they are to set up. Like a visual proof that's like a prototype, and that's like one of the things mm-hmm. that's really great about Pattern Lab, and that's one of the things that Brett Frost and Dave Olson kind of mentions. Like, you know, you and also you know Sparkbox with Ben Callahan, he talks about just making sure you get a prototype up and running as fast mm-hmm. as possible within the browser. Pretty good. Is that so? Is that fair estimates or like fair thinking of what a design system is?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Part of this with say like the style tiles, and what's kind of neat is that as design systems have grown and evolved over the years, we've changed the different type of deliverables we're able to use to represent them. Mm-hmm. And style tiles, I mean, kind of one of the earliest ones, is an interesting kind of snapshot in the history of design systems, and that you know, in the end, it's still a design that we're trying to sell. It's a, like, here is a collection of visuals and aesthetics and colors and shapes. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you need to, you know, get buy-in from the people that are actually paying you to do said system. And so style tiles gives you kind of a great opportunity to kind of create a snapshot of that system.
Right.
Oftentimes before it even gets anywhere close to code. But again, like there's all this big spectrum of all these different tools, from something very kind of static and, you know, not super concrete. I mean, these might not even be anywhere close to the finished product in the style tile. You might even have like a collage of just imagery that's just grabbed from other places that you might use for something like that. But in general, as time moves on, you get definitely much higher fidelity, to the point where you're actually getting things into code as soon as possible, and then continuing to build on that until you have much more fidelic. Is that even a word? Better fidelity.
It is now.
It is now. We just put it in the annals.
Yeah, that's the name of my new album, that way, Fidelic. I've seen this, like, design systems are now like being adopted by companies, and so I don't know if you want to mm-hmm. if you could talk about your work at Salesforce, Gina, in terms of getting a design system in place. Like can you talk about the history of that at all?
Yeah, for sure. So I was already working at Salesforce for a smaller product called Do, and I was trying to do design systems and style guides there. And then I discovered there was a team in the core product team working on a style guide. And the style guide was focused on the Salesforce One mobile application. And, you know, it was getting a lot of traction because it was a very beautifully made style guide. And it definitely caught my eye. And so, you know, transferred over to that team. And as exciting and beautiful as that style guide was, I discovered that it actually wasn't really put to use. Mm-hmm. And part of that was, you know, there were a lot of different factors. Like part of it was just, it, you know, it was a great guide to inspire designers, but engineers weren't even using the same code. Right. They weren't applying it into, they weren't using the same markup. They weren't, like, everything was just not the same. Mm-hmm. And so we realized we needed to kind of take it a little bit further than just that style guide. And then design tokens were sort of an initial like piece of the Lightning design system as it is now that we started working on then. And if you're not familiar with design tokens, it's basically how you can scale your visual design across multiple devices and platforms. Mm. Most commonly they're used as like SAS variables, but you can also use them as like information in JSON or XML, so you can apply it to other like native platforms and generate swatches and like all that fun stuff. So we were working on building out that system, and then we actually encouraged the designers to spec their designs using token names instead of value names values. And then we got that process in place. That was good. Devs were using the tokens in their code, so everybody's speaking the same language. Mm-hmm. But it still needed to be a little bit more. And so, you know, pitched the idea of a CSS framework, hired Stephanie Ruiz, who's amazing. And we, you know, kind of just started building out the CSS framework. And the thinking was actually that we were going to use it on the design team to rapidly prototype with.
Right.
And then release it to the open source community that are building their own apps for the Salesforce ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And then maybe one day this might actually work in our product. Totally did not work out that way at all. It got all flipped around because people started using it in product by copying and pasting the code. And we were like, oh, okay, people are already using this. We need to find a better way than to have them just copy and pasting our code. And so we kind of flipped the model around and focused on our engineers first and then our open source community. And now we're like focusing back on the designers again. So it's kind of come a long way. And, you know, I'm skipping a whole bunch of history, but that's basically the gist of how it got up and going.
Right. I mean, and you've scaled a lot of like time in terms of technology and stuff because can you talk about like what a design token, you talk about it being a form of a JSON file or a SAS variable. Can you talk about what in a design system, like what type of things can get stored and passed and where does it go? Like where does it go to from and where does it go to and what's in a JSON file?
Yeah. Absolutely. So if you think about CSS, it can be anything behind the colon. So it can be colors, sizing, it could be even like animation durations. I think we even have some media queries stored as tokens, like which I guess technically aren't really behind the colon. But yeah, you know what I mean. But yeah, we store just name and value pairs. And then through that, we can apply those name and value pairs to multiple devices, platforms, technology stacks, and so on. And the way we do it is, so the design team that I'm on, we maintain we moved from JSON to YAML because it's a little more designer friendly. So we store all our name and value pairs. We categorize them. We can pass in other data, like what CSS properties it's allowed to be used on, and whether or not it's deprecated, and and we can like do a lot of testing and tooling around this. And then, basically, the build process that I'm not 100% knowledgeable about, but we have an open source tool that does this. But it generates files from there, so it's like SAS, LESS, stylus, JSON, XML. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Style guide, the page of tokens are generated from that too. And then when the engineers are using it, they just pull in the version of the tokens they need, whether it's XML or SAS, or we have our own proprietary format called Lightning. So it's, just awesome. Because, you know, like we use accessibility tooling to tell us if our colors aren't contrasted enough.
Right.
And if we found out there was a color that needed to be updated, you used to have to notify the, iOS team, the Android team, the web team, but now we can just control it all on our end, which is kind of nice.
Right. So like, do you get like a warning when you generate it on your end? Like you're building out a design system or is it someone says like, oh, by the way, they get notified on their end and then.
I think we have tooling on both sides.
Okay.
Just in case something slips through, then they get notified too.
Okay. And so if I'm someone working on some product in the middle of like different office entirely, or like, no, like that doesn't mean anything, but you know, I could be like next door, I could be like, you know, half a world away. And do I get notified of a color issue or when I build it out, or do I, and what is my action item? Like do I get notified? Or do you get sent an email automatically, or is it
somebody Snapchat? Comes over and slaps your hand?
it's Snapchat.
Yeah, we send Simon after them. No, but yeah. So accessibility is a requirement in the code base, and if a test goes and checks like a color and it doesn't pass, they actually cannot check that code in on their end. Then on our side, you know, we try to avoid it even coming to that in the first place by, making sure our design tokens are all valid before it even gets to that point.
So you have a build so you have checks on your end, and they have checks before they can come. Okay, awesome. That's awesome. So Micah, you work at Microsoft, and what's your history with design systems?
Oh, it goes definitely back beyond that. I spent about 3 years prior to that working with Red Hat. I think we had a show kind of talking about it, and building out a system for them was interesting because it was very much more a static site with just, you know, how do we share our marketing information? How do we share our, you know, the information that we need to write into CMS and get that to display to the users? So real static, real simple, you know, lots of just basic templates that how can we take input of data and render it out into you know, a page for people to read, nice and simple. But then after I left there and came over to Microsoft last year, I was forced to tackle the one thing that I'd always pushed off was we don't really do a lot of JavaScript in the Red Hat work we did. You know, there was a couple, you know, click here to open this or click here to change a tab or like super basic UI kind of things. But there's really no built-in ways to connect things, to connect data, connect values from here to there, change something here and to change somewhere else. And that's something that I had to tackle really head on when I came into Microsoft, because we were, you know, we weren't building marketing sites for Microsoft. We were building applications, you know, applications where you drag content around, where you, you know, check boxes and click something, where you're doing drop downs and type aheads and all those types of things that, you know, it's a world of JavaScript to need to do that. So it was a huge transition, and probably the biggest difference in those two systems is that one was very agnostic of how it was built. It was just, you know, some Twig templates that could really be rendered in PHP or Node or really anything that could handle those templates. When we're working at Microsoft, it was 100% React is the direction we decided to go with it. Because we realized that, it's kind of going back to this, the question of what is a design system? For us, it was not just the look and feel of the components, you know, how did the button look, but also how did the button behave. We just had an instance email came across today about someone was asking, we've got our pivots or our tabs that typically, when you keyboard to them, like if you tab to the tabs or to these pivots, the way that we have it set up for accessibility is that you can then use the mouse, keyboard, left or right arrows to move through those items within that tab selection. And the user specifically was asking, hey, how can I change that so that you tab through all of them? And the response was basically, well, that's not how our system works. Like, our users expect a certain thing. So it's really interesting that this just came up today, because it's demonstrating how, in this case, actually, I believe this people that were asking us have really reskinned the components. So they're literally not even asking for us to provide them with something, have something to look. No. We're providing them with a code of how to build it.
Oh, nice.
And in doing so, we're trying to make sure that that we've given the components that make things function the same. Mm-hmm. So if you are in say if you're in Outlook for the web and you're keyboarding around using mouse, tab, whatever combination you're using, you're going to have the exact same experience as this other application. And creating things with a JavaScript framework layer underneath it allows us to actually create that kind of consistency that is really, for one, really difficult to explain without JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And then obviously very difficult to expect someone to implement and implement consistently. If you just go, here's what we want it to do and here's how it should look, go do it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting, again, kind of that whole spectrum of, you know, you can have a bunch of flat comps to say, this is what a button looks like. Mm-hmm. You can have HTML and CSS to say, hey, this is the code that we want to represent the button. Right. Or you can move a step forward and say, here's the JavaScript framework that will render your button and tie the click handlers to other things inside your application. And for us, moving kind of that next level of it has been a really interesting learning experience, to say the least.
Right. So I guess, Gino, like you said, like, it sounds like this is a kind of a behavior design system, sort of, like, because he's building different components and he's not even talking about design. Well, like, you know, but yeah, it's just like, which is a great, you know, I have a design, visual design background. So I'm like, what? Design systems, whatever. But yeah, so that's awesome. So so it just kind of blows my mind that, like, now you're like, it sounds like, you know, it's a design system is a way of just not just the visual components of it, you know, in terms of building it, but it's also, you know, it sounds like Micah is you're just building out, you know, functionality. right? Mm-hmm. For a whole different suite of programs that might not even be existed yet. Like maybe like next week someone comes with an idea and it's like, oh, I have this idea for this program. How can I, what's the Microsoft or our company way of doing things?
Yeah, I mean, because the idea is we have, we actually had build a couple months ago here in Seattle, and I spent a good bit of time in the booth. And it was funny, the amount of Microsoft developers that came up and talked to us, because it was a Fabric booth, and told us about some random side project of tapping into some AI thing or whatever. And then they have all this data and they want to display it and allow people to interact with the data and do things with it. And how they're like, oh yeah, I found Fabric and it was awesome. And I was just able to quickly spin up this application to work with it. And people that we'd never talked to, people that we'd never like marketed it towards, but being a tool within the organization, it was easy for them to pick up and use. But then obviously even for the, more importantly for applications that we're going to release and actually, you know, charge somebody money for, be able to have I kind of keep coming back to our list component, and the lists are kind of at the heart and soul of what really, I'm sure Gina the same, but we create lots of lists. We have lots of data and we need to create lists of it. And it could be 10 long, it could be thousands long, and you need to select them and you need to reorganize them and sort them. And there's so much that happens inside a list. And if you expect every single group that works with web technology to create their own list and figure out, oh, how do we do virtualizing for our list? How do we do selections for our list? What's keyboard navigation for the list? If you expect everyone to do that, they're all going to do it very differently. And if you find a bug that's in all of them, now you have to go fix them in all of them. So having a single place where we have a list component and you can, there's literally no stylings. And actually I've gotten random email complaints of like, hey, I built this thing with the list and it doesn't look like yours. I'm like, yeah, it's because that's our demo. Our example has all those extra styles thrown in. List literally, like, it's just containers,
right,
to render things inside of, you know, all the magic happens around it. It doesn't assume a lot about what goes inside of it. It just gives you all that functionality that you always need every time you want to make a list of something. There's kind of a combination. There's a lot of stuff in Fabric that is very design specific. Like, this is how a button should look. This is how a dropdown should look. This is how this experience should look. Mm-hmm. These are the paddings and margins and all those kind of things. You know, but in the same respect, if you need to strip all that off and just have the same functionality, all of that's there and available as well.
Okay.
Which gets us to the theming, which we're trying to get to really soon, because it's you never want people just going in and hacking at the markup and the built-in class names in there, because that just causes trouble.
Okay, cool. And then I'm not a React expert, but like so components, you could just like say, hey, here's a component, and that's like, you know, because I want to get at in terms of passing JSON files. So basically are you just distributing components, or do you have a repo and people can go back and forth and pull directly from
there's one single repo that they're all published inside of.
Okay.
And then with JavaScript, just has really great tooling around whether it's ESX modules or require JS or third one I'm forgetting, that you're really AMD. Really quickly able to say, hey, I want that one component pulled out of there. And if it's a button, the crazy thing is everyone talks about the $1 million button because it's so true. We spend so much time on this button because it's so much more than just a single button. Because our button now has a dropdown. Our button can be a split button with a button and a dropdown, with multiple tab regions. It's just kind of crazy. A button is typically way more than just a single component. It actually uses other components in the system. So with using a module-based system, you're able to say, hey, I want the primary button. And the primary button says, oh, cool, all right, I can give you the primary button. Here's these other three components you need to be able to render that button as well. And whatever component that is, the module system allows you to do that. So you can pull the pieces out that you want, and then we can automatically say, oh, you're going to need these as well inside your shopping bag if you're going to pull those out. But it keeps people from having to download the entire framework just to get that single button.
All right, cool. Well, I mean, just talking about the examples from Salesforce and Microsoft and Red Hat, it sounds like I think it's an easy sale. I mean, I know it took a while to get to this point, obviously, on, you know, for both sides, for everyone. But like, But I think it's an easy sell in terms of like, hey, we have like a living design, design style. How beneficial would it be for a small company or one person tooling up a website or spinning up a website? And what kind of assets and could one person use or what small team could use? Gina?
Yeah, I think it's totally beneficial for small companies and individuals. And I've been a design team of two or three. I've also been the only person doing design. And you're still going to need resources and assets, and you still want to work in a maintainable and consistent way. Mm-hmm. And so you might not build out something that is as big as Lightning or Fabric, but you could still build something that works for you. There's a lot of cool design tools out right now that help with this. I feel like every week there's a new tool being released. If you're using design tools, I really like what I've been seeing in Figma. It's got a really interesting way to store components and be able to change properties of those components as you use them. And what I saw Abstract release just like last week in beta, I think, was or the week before, looks pretty good too. So lots of design tools, lots of open source tools for the coding side of things. Like, I think it's a lot easier now to get started because there's so many tools. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, now that I'm saying that, I realize it's probably overwhelming right now to get started because there's so many tools. But lots of people are sharing their toys, which is really nice.
Well, what would you say like is a good, if someone's looking out there, like what would you, Gina, like what would you say is like a like good trademarks or smell tests, if you will, for a good a design style tool like out there?
I would say if it has a concept of grouping things into components, mm-hmm. Maybe it's a symbol, maybe it's an actual component. That's like the biggest one. If you can't have a repeatable object that you can alter, I'm thinking of, like in Photoshop, you might think, oh, well, smart object would work. Well, if you change the text in that smart object, it's actually changing that text everywhere. Tools like Sketch and Figma, like then you can actually change out the text. You can change how wide the button is and so on. So that's good. I also like tools that, Sketch, I think, is great because you can extend it and do a lot of collaboration through it. There's so many plugins out there that you can use with it. And I tinkered around a little bit with Adobe's Experience Design. And when I saw it and played around with it, I was like, I wish this existed when I designed using design tools. Same thing. I had the same reaction with Figma because I kind of just design in the browser now. So, okay. But there's a lot of really great tools out right now.
Yeah, we actually use Adobe XD at Microsoft, mostly because at Microsoft there are a lot of PC users. Mm-hmm. And Sketch, unfortunately, has not made the jump yet. But for us, Sketch has been XD has been really quite good. I think Adobe's doing a good job basically burning everything to the ground, and they started from scratch. I mean, literally, there wasn't a lot of features when it started out because they're like, what do we need to do to actually build out, create a tool for design system creation? Mm. And from, I think the first time I saw, create a media widget or whatever with an image and some text, and then, oh, hey, now you can repeat it by just dragging. And it like, as you continue to drag, it just repeats them. And then you can grab a set of images from a folder on your desktop and drop it in, and each image goes into each one of the media objects. Mm. I was like, all right, sold. I mean, they definitely are thinking of ways, how can you quickly prototype these ideas from multiple items and with the end goal in mind of some kind of interface inside of an application. Mm. So it's very early days. They're taking lots of feedback, which is really great to see. I think there might even be maybe support for something similar to tokens in the future, because I know that's a big desire mm-hmm. of ours at Microsoft is, mm-hmm. We don't want to use colors anymore. We really want to use color names so that we don't have to keep going, all right, that's that hex color, which maps over to that name, which needs to go over here. And it just, it's a lot of brain work to possibly get wrong many, many times.
All right. Cool. So I don't like asking this question a lot at conferences because I feel like you guys are super qualified and you won't let us stray. But what do you guys see for the future of design systems, Gina? You can start first.
Let me look into my crystal ball here. it's just amazing how incredible the energy is right now around design systems. And as I mentioned, tools are coming out constantly. It's really hard to say. Like I know there's been like jokes, but you know, AI designed tools and resources, like, mm-hmm. you know, if we build systems out to be smart enough, we can just have a screen design itself, maybe. But that's kind of, I know, very sci-fi, but
I think it's so sci-fi because you can actually say like self-driving car and no one's going to think you're crazy because we actually have companies spending money. And so it's not that far off that you think like self-driving, you know, design systems, you know.
Yeah. But like the part of the reason I love design systems is the people part of it. And so I'm really hoping this drives product cultures to be better just through better design systems, better processes, better everything.
All right. So Micah, I'm going to ask you.
Sure.
What's the future?
Yeah, I think immediate future, I think there's kind of the like, you know, what's in the next 6 months, couple of years, and then what's way out. I feel strongly that moving into kind of that next phase of, you know, we've got visuals down tight. Like we know how to put something on the page and make it look the same from an application to another. But moving on into interaction, which is specifically why I'm talking about it at CSS DevConf, is I think that's the next step because there's so much energy spent and trying to recreate all of those interactions, especially when you have an organization like Microsoft that is, you know, we are still a good, you know, bit of silos going on. We've got, you know, application teams that are building an application from, you know, from top to bottom. Every single one of those teams is having to recreate a lot of that functionality. It's just, it's a ton of misspent energy. And I think we're seeing that the value proposition of that is huge, even if it does mean that, you know, we all need to come together on a single JavaScript platform. But also what I think this means is that, and at least I hope, is that the future of web components might actually solve some of these things as well. Now, web components are nowhere near there at the moment. There's a lot of work and growth to do. But if we could get to the point where instead of having to go to React to build out our new button with a little dropdown, if we can actually just make a new web component, and then ship this new web component along with our design system, then you can drop it into whatever JavaScript framework that you want to, because all that's encapsulated in some kind of web standard type of application. And for me, I really hope that what we're able to show is possible inside of React and other frameworks is very componentized little pieces that can go get combined together to create larger experiences. Is that we have a huge need to be able to do that natively without, you know, without having to, you know, rope a framework around your neck. Because, you know, who knows, not everyone wants to use that. Who knows what's the environment's going to be like in 5 years and those types of things. So that's certainly my goal, my hope for the future. I think there's a lot of interesting things that might come up in VR and AR and some of those other spaces. And I know Microsoft's been doing a lot of work with trying to create, I think even their lower level design system called Fluent right now has a lot of prescriptions about how things should work inside of augmented reality as well. But again, that's kind of pulling back. That's not literally how does a button look and how does button behave. It's a little bit more aesthetics and kind of going back to that voice kind of thing, though it's just more touch and feel or something. Because we'll have voice, touch, and feel inside of our style guides. So I think that'll be certainly coming in the next several years.
Yeah, I think I first learned about web components like several years ago, and I was not happy because I guess I didn't really understand it. I think it was like too early for me to grok what it is. But now, like web components, I'm like, I'm starting to come around to it. Like, oh yeah, okay, I guess, you know. But yeah, I think the whole like being too ingrained with CSS probably is holding me back from realizing it's future potential, but I feel like, you know, once the browser, you know, gets better and better with it and probably assumes like more things natively for CSS, I think I'm
pretty once we can start defining our own functionality, defining our own HTML elements that just work natively in the browser, and then you can wrap those inside of your React or Angular application, I think it's going to work a whole lot better. But from looking at the spec right now, there's a long ways to go, and I know they're working on it, and I'm excited to kind of see where that goes. Yeah, not to poo-poo or anything, because like there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm excited to see what happens there.
Right. Well, I'm excited for design systems in general, because I feel like, just from the print world, there's just a lot of waste with design systems that they like a print style guide, you know, that they would have. For companies, I would see these style guides like, yeah, they look beautiful, but however, when these, agencies or organizations that you never heard of, which is a great your story about how you're at this conference and someone comes up to you and is like, thank you so much for building this, Micah. This is great, for your team building it and implementing it right away. I think that's like, it just shows you like how much time and energy was not wasted compared to before, like in growing up, with the web and going to college with the web and seeing all these colleges build their own websites that didn't follow a style guide. And then going back to school for a master's and realizing that's still a problem. So I'm really hopeful that, this kind of all this stuff, like with the JSON and even the YAML part that you brought up with your designers, Gina, like that makes me excited because like YAML is a little bit easier to read for designers, no knock on designers, but so that makes me excited. So that's really exciting. So I think the future is really great. So, well, I appreciate you guys being on the show,
Can I plug a design system Slack right now?
Yes, please do. Yeah. How people can find you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good Slack. There's like, I think last I checked over 2,700 people in there that are just super into design systems. So if you go to designsystems.herokuapp.com, you put in your email, it'll automatically send you an invite into the community.
Right. So. And I highly recommend it because you just dive in and see what's going on. And that's where I first learned about the whole term design tokens. And I was like, what the heck are design tokens? So definitely recommend to keep on tabs with that. So how else can people follow you on the internets and give you money and all sorts of things?
So I'm on Twitter as Gina, J-I-N-A. I am going into consulting, so you can give me money that way. Or come to my conference, Clarity. It's in November in San Francisco. So it's a design systems conference.
Cool. Awesome. And Micah, how can people get a hold of you?
Sure. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Micah Godbolt. Check out my blog, micahgodbolt.com. There's lots of links there to past talks and blog articles I've written elsewhere and book that I wrote on design systems and all those fun things. But upcoming, I will be at CSS DevConf in New Orleans this fall. Doing a talk on this whole design systems 2.0 concept, as well as doing a workshop, a full-day workshop, getting you in the trenches and building out a design system from scratch and just kind of seeing what the whole thing is about. Cool. So that's a great way to give me some money and have a lot of fun at the same time.
All right, cool.
And your book.
Yes, your book.
Yeah, your
Front-end architecture for design systems. Check it out.
Yes, it's a great book. Biased because I help tech it too, but anyway,
it's your fault I wrote it.
Exactly, that too. So congratulations. thank you both for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yep, thanks for having us.